SRN.
I was visiting a bar there, not unlike this one. They serve beer, not quite as good as this, but close. And in walks the biggest Mexican I have ever seen. Big as shit. Just walks right in like he owns a place. Now, nobody knew quite what to make of him or quite what to think. But there he was, and in he walked.
Welcome to episode 23 of Cinema Crespo Diso. It is me, your host, Christopher Crespo, film critic extraordinaire, writer, script doctor for hire, have trigger will travel. With me is my co-host, the one and only Drewster Cogburn. Drew, how's it going?
Doing okay, dude. How you doing?
Doing well, dude. This lazy Sunday afternoon.
No, man, I already took two naps today. I'm so lazy.
That's the kind of Sunday we're having here at the Crespo Diso Studios, and it's all good. We're just hanging out, having a good time, and felt like sitting down, maybe recording an episode for you guys, right?
Well, we've got to in between all my napping. I need to do it while I'm awake.
Oh, you mean there's more napping to come?
Oh, definitely. I definitely got another nap in me today.
Holy goodness gracious. All right, well, let's get this in, folks, before the tryptophan or whatever is in this guy's system kicks in and he's out again. We got a jam-packed show, Drew, I gotta tell you. And we had a guest booked.
I know.
But we had to reschedule because we booked it without realizing it's Father's Day weekend.
Yeah.
And some people out there are fathers.
Yes, they have things to do.
And our sons as well.
Exactly.
And have obligations. So we rescheduled. We're looking forward to having this guest in the studio soon. Some of you know who it is. Some of you, it's a mystery. Can't wait to reveal it.
Ooh.
And we have a guest for next week. That's going to be fun, too. I'm really looking forward to that one.
Yeah.
But it's just you and me today, dude. So we're going to start with the Netflix Instant Pick of the Week. Got the Netflix randomizer.
It doesn't shake as much as it used to. We're running out of things in here.
I also took out a lot of stuff that
you didn't care about it anymore?
No, that was gone. That wasn't on the Netflix anymore that they took off. Because you know how they do. That's the problem with the Netflix, man. The licensing deals run out or, you know, people just don't watch stuff. So they take it off to make room for all the bandwidth. Because, you know, on a Thursday, Friday evening prime time, Netflix accounts for like 30% of the internet bandwidth in the country. It's pretty ridiculous. So anyway, Drew is now looking into the Netflix pick of the week. He's checking for on the website for verification. He's nodding. Right. He's nodding. It looks like we got it good. We're good. We gotta go.
Yes, we do.
All right, Drew, what do we got?
This week's Netflix instant pick of the week is Darren Aronofsky's Pie.
Whoa.
It's a good one.
Woo! Darren Aronofsky's Pie.
It's a goodie.
That's
yeah.
That's Darren Aronofsky's pretty much like his student film.
Yeah. And it is really freaking. It's
crazy.
It is crazy. And it's a really. It's a nice. It's a good starter piece for him.
It is. That's why I called it his student film. Yeah. I don't know if it necessarily was, but he did it when he was like 28, 29. Black and white movie, super low budget, made it with a bunch of his friends, you know, non-professional actors. He's got one or two real actors in there. But it's about a guy who's a mathematician, and he's going a little crazy. He's just got all the numbers in his head, and the pressure's building up. And it's kind of has a little bit of like Cronenberg-style horror to it, and also a little bit of Lynchian, you know, surrealist horror.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like at one point, he comes across like some brains on a subway stairs. Wow, it's a crazy movie. And it's Aronofsky. It's early, raw, young Darren Aronofsky, who went on, let's see if I can name them all in order.
All right.
Where after that, he did Requiem for a Dream.
Correct.
Which is that's a mind f of a movie.
Oh, man. Wow. That movie.
That movie will
make you feel so dirty.
It will ruin your night. But it's so well made.
It is. Which makes you want to watch it again.
It took him a little while, but he followed it up with The Fountain.
Oh, man.
Love that film.
Freaking movie.
Great movie.
Oh.
And then he had a nice run there with The Wrestler.
Yep.
and Black Swan.
Correct.
Both very well received. Black Swan making over $100 million.
The Wrestler and The Wrestler for Girls.
And The Wrestler for Girls, according to Drewster Cogburn. And that now he's following that up with his first big budget movie. He finally got one of his dream projects made, Noah.
Yeah.
The biblical epic of Noah.
Yeah.
Starring Russell Crowe as Noah. We'll talk more about Russell Crowe later.
Yes, we will.
And Anthony Hopkins as Methuselah, the world's oldest man, like 900-year-old man.
Well, I can see that. Anthony Hopkins is definitely getting up there.
Yeah, he is. He is getting up there. So that's exciting. Aronofsky's doing that. So before we get to see his, you know, I'm sure it's $100 million or whatever, biblical epic that's going to be crazy. They even built like two versions of the Ark.
I'm sure.
In upstate New York to make this movie. Before that comes out next year, I guess, go on to Netflix and check out Pi. Crazy, complete opposite, low budget, no special, not computer special effects, but no flash, just raw craziness.
Yeah, it's black and white too, which I think we should mention.
Love the black and white. Black and white film.
Yes.
That's an art form right there.
It's only 85 minutes too.
And it's a quick one, guys.
It's a quickie.
It's a quickie. So why don't you follow that up with this week's bonus Netflix Instant Pick of the Week.
Bonus.
Because I can't pass this up. They just added it. I had to say it. It's got to be pointed out. Upstream Color is on the Netflix Instant Pick of the Week. And for those of you...
Oh, man, what a weird movie.
For those of you film fans, aficionados, the ones really looking for something different and challenging and interesting and over-the-top artistic...
And that movie is all four of those things.
And it's very well made by Shane Carruth. It's his follow-up film to The Primer, which is also on the Netflix. If you haven't seen Primer...
And a previous Pick of the Week.
Previous Pick of the Week, yes, it is. If you haven't seen Primer, highly recommend watching Primer, which is only like 77 minutes, and then watching Upstream Color, which is about 90-something minutes. Upstream Color is a crazy, crazy movie. I've watched it three times now in the last couple of weeks. And, you know, on the third viewing, Drew...
It's starting to make sense?
It's more than starting to make sense. I got it.
Oh, wow.
I got it. I don't know, man. I got it all.
I'm going to have to watch it a couple more times.
Yeah, I got it all. So if you have any questions, watch Upstream Color on the Netflix Instant. Then if you have any questions or you just want to...
It's not if you have any questions. When you have the questions.
When you have the questions and you want to discuss some things or you have crazy ideas or your own theories because it's an open movie like that.
Definitely.
You and I have had plenty of discussions about this movie already. Hit us up, cinemacrespodiso@gmail.com or on Twitter at Crespodiso. Hit us up. Talk to us about what you thought of Upstream Color. It's a crazy movie, guys. Just stick with it. Stick with, right, Drew?
Yes. Oh, totally. Stick with it. Watch the whole thing.
Just stick with it. So that's your double Netflix Instant Pick of the Week. Pi and Upstream Color. I mean, come on.
Those are two great movies.
Come on. All right.
You can't ask for anything better from us.
And both very low budget. The combined budgets between those two movies has to be under $3 million.
Probably.
Maybe even less, because I don't know the Upstream Color budget. All right. Speaking of budgets... That means money. That means the box office review of the weekend, Drew.
Yeah.
You got the box office mojo numbers right there?
Yes, sir.
What do we got on this Father's Day weekend?
Father's Day weekend, number five this week, we have The Purge, which had a weekend gross of $8.2 million, total gross of $51.9 on a budget of $3.
A movie about a father, played by Ethan Hawke, trying to keep his family safe on the night when all crime is legal.
Yep.
Someone pointed out that it's a world where all crime is legal, but all people do is murder.
Yeah.
There are no other crimes being committed.
I'm sure there are, but no one's focusing on them.
They're not showing them at all.
No.
That's kind of the limitation. That shows the limitation of the movie. The small, actual, even though it's a huge idea.
I mean, if all crime was legal, yeah, I'd probably be killing some people, but I'd also be robbing every single bank.
Well, that's the idea. You would think people would go out and rob, and there's plenty of other crimes, even just... I heard someone say that they would go to Walmart and like spray paint over all the walls, like just crazy stuff.
How embarrassing would it be for two groups of bank robbers coming up on the same bank on that night,
and then they end up killing each other.
Yeah,
but guys, there's another bank. They bunch together sometime. There's another one right over there. It's actually a very small movie. It's a big idea, but they made a small movie. It's a house invasion, and it's a father trying to protect his family. So very much a Father's Day movie.
It was all right. It was worth watching.
I didn't think it was really worth watching. Drew likes it, though. And there are some people out there. I've heard people say that they like it. DJ Babylack is a big fan of The Purge. He really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
You can ask him about that at DJ Babylack. Let's move on. What's the number four?
All right, number four this week, we have Fast and Furious 6. It had a weekend gross of $9.4 million. Total gross at $219.6 on a budget of $160.
A movie where a new father has to protect his family from some bad guys.
I'm detecting a theme here.
And Vin Diesel is also feeling like the surrogate family of his own huge team of ragtag criminals, the world's worst Ocean's 11.
Yes.
Furious 6 at $636 million worldwide.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of dough, as they say in Italy. And racist people say that. People say that in Italy anyway.
So you're racist.
I'm not. That just came out. That just came
by
out.
By your own logic, Chris, you are racist.
I'm saying that's what the racist people say. Martin Scorsese, he has characters. He writes characters that are racist in his movies. Does that make Martin Scorsese racist?
Maybe.
That's why I've always wondered that too. Tarantino does the same thing. Furious 6, crazy amounts of money. Furious 7 is coming next year.
And it's going to be making crazy amounts of money.
Probably even more because of the big setup at the end. I guess for like when it comes to spoilers and stuff, we have to wait for like DVD. When DVD comes out, we can start.
While it's still in theaters, we shouldn't.
I mean, it's pretty. A lot of people know how it's set up. It's out there, but we here at Cinema Crespi so aren't into spoiling and ruining things. We want you to enjoy the discovery of cinema as much as we do. Right?
Correct.
So what do you got? What's the next movie?
Number three this week, we have Now You See Me. It had a weekend gross at $10.3 million. Total gross at $80 on a budget of $75.
Now You See Me, that magician movie.
That is the world's worst Ocean's 11.
They are pretty bad Ocean's 11.
I'm going to give the Fast and Furious people a little bit of an edge on these guys.
They can drive pretty fast. Driving fast is better than
Vin Diesel can fly now.
Now You See Me, this one, that's a movie about a dead father and... I'm trying.
You're really pulling with these,
and then Michael Caine is an old guy. So he's someone's father. And Morgan Freeman, he's old. He's a grandfather. Yeah, there's really no connection to that one. Magician's Heist, it's silly. It's stupid. I really didn't like it.
I enjoyed it.
It's watchable.
It was fun.
It's watchable in like a 90s movie way, you know? If this was made in the 90s, I'm like, whoa, that was okay.
It's watchable. It's a heist movie. If you like heist movies,
and I do like,
I mean, come on.
I do like good heist movies. This one's an okay one.
Heist movie.
I wouldn't really totally shit on it. Did I shit on it?
Yeah, you did.
Well,
you shat on it.
Moving on.
All right, number two this week.
Let's get to the good stuff.
This is the end.
All right,
with a weekend gross of $20.5 million, total gross of $32.8 million. On a budget of 32, so there we go. It's made its money back.
Right
good
there.
Job. Good job, Seth.
Right there. And I think it made like another 7-10 million already international. I have no idea what the international appeal of this movie is, the possible market. It's very interesting because it's so, you know, it's American actors.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's a very American viewpoint of the biblical apocalypse, even though it's written by a couple of Canadians.
Canadian Jews.
I'll say North American. Canadian Jews, that's right. Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg. Friends, I don't know, going like their childhood friends all the way back in Canada. When they were in high school, they wrote Superbad.
Yep.
Which then, when they had the clout to in their late 20s or whatever, they eventually made into a movie and it was awesome. Had an idea for this biblical apocalypse thing. Apparently, did a short film called Seth and Jay versus the End of the World. And it's just a short film someone did for a film school, and it was like a friend of Seth Rogen. So Seth got Jay to do it because they're buddies, and it's just them in their apartment, and the world is ending like outside, and then they're just bitching about stuff.
Yeah.
And Seth Rogen said that it didn't come out too well. Like in a 5-minute short, 10-minute short film, it was like, it was okay. But then they cut it down to like a 30-45 second trailer, and it made a great trailer.
Okay.
So then the legend of that project, the supposed project that was never actually going to happen, grew. Yeah. And enough people asking about it that they're like, all right, well, maybe we should look into actually writing the script. And then they did, and they spent a while, and it's the first one that they directed. I think they did a pretty good job as directors.
Great job. Yeah.
You know, they it wasn't flashy or anything, but it was definitely, they told the story, they told it well, visually, everything. They had some big set pieces, some big action. Don't want to give away too much in this movie. There's a lot of, like, really good, fun little surprises.
Oh, man,
this movie.
Yeah, there are, man.
But
there,
we both,
there are a couple that I really want to talk about because they're so damn funny.
Yeah, yeah, it's, ooh. Man, oh, man. There's some crazy things in there. As far as people know, in the marketing, it's all about, like, Seth Rogen. A bunch of people go to James Franco's house for a party, and it's a bunch of celebrities being themselves.
Well, versions of themselves.
Yeah, absolutely, definitely versions of themselves. Apparently all single versions of themselves, like, with no family attachments whatsoever.
Yes, none of them have any family or any real friends or any, you know, significant others.
It's interesting. Yeah, they just know each other as, well, but there is, like, a nice little heart to the story, an emotional core to the story that's like the whole Judd Apatow school of comedy, where even stuff where a movie about a 40-year-old virgin, which is a high concept, you know, stupid lowbrow comedy type deal. It's all about, you know, the heart and soul of the character and actually having kind of a right-wing message at the end.
Yeah.
A lot of these movies, they're slathered in dick jokes and, like, just horrible stuff. But in the end, they have very right-wing, conservative, almost family value messages.
Yeah.
40-year-old virgin's all about the benefits of waiting to have sex and waiting to get married to have sex and all that. Knocked Up is all about, you know, if you get someone pregnant, you know, sticking through with it and manning up and becoming a father. Abortion, we're not even going to mention. Like, we'll talk about it real quickly and then just dismiss it.
It's
not even a real conversation. And then this is the end. It has kind of a moral.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Has a moral underpinning to it, because they are taking the story from the Book of Revelations, you know.
They're having some fun with it.
Definitely having fun with it, for sure. But the only way for there to be any sort of resolution through going through a biblical book like Revelations has to be using, like, virtue.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Well, obviously, there's a logical endpoint to it.
Yes, exactly. It has to go that way.
Yeah.
But I think they did a really good job. And apparently, the movie is well received enough. A lot of people like it. It's a very popular movie.
Well, it's the funniest movie I've seen this year.
It's
Chris.
The funniest movie I've seen
in a while, actually.
Since, like, Bridesmaids, the first Hangover.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a few years.
Man, I think Bridesmaids was the last movie where I actually, like, laughed out loud.
Yeah,
in the
bunch
theater.
Of times. Like, whoa, that was crazy.
Yeah.
That was, like, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
3 years ago? Man, time flies, dude.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, so this is definitely, like,
oh, that's so funny.
Definitely something I can recommend. Just check it out. It's a crazy movie. There will be things in it that should offend your sensibilities.
Of course.
If it doesn't offend your sensibilities,
then you might not have sensibilities anymore.
Then you're a soulless, amoral person. Most likely. But yeah, man. I thought it was great. Michael Cera.
I was about to say, Michael Cera had the standout cameos.
Yeah. It was an extended one. It's like the first 10 minutes of the movie
is
where they're establishing
pretty much
everyone.
Michael Cera.
Yeah, and oh, man, he's just.
Yeah,
he's
wild. Totally. It's sippy time, Chris.
Oh, my goodness.
That's all I'm going to say. It's sippy time.
Oh, my goodness. So I definitely can recommend people checking this out in a theater.
Definitely.
It's worth your time and your money.
Go out. See it with your friends, and then get drunk and recite all the lines afterwards.
Yeah. See if you can. This is one where it's worth trying to catch with kind of a full theater. If there's a bunch of other people there,
yeah.
You know, comedy always works when with other people there laughing and stuff. Definitely would benefit from for a screening for this. So yeah, we're both in agreement. Check it out in a theater.
Yes, definitely.
Get out there.
100%.
See, This Is the End. Which,
it's hilarious.
How much? $32 million opening weekend for, you know, crazy R-rated movie like this.
Mm-hmm.
Good job, guys.
Yes.
Good job. So yeah, they already have an idea for another movie. Apparently their follow-up that Evan and Seth are, I guess they have already written it or they're writing it, and they're going to shoot it next year. They're prepping it in July is what he said in his interview. Their next movie is about two dentists. What do? They like go and find like a serial killer, or it's something like really heavy and weird. It's not the most out there comedy thing, but it's gonna be him and James Franco.
Okay,
they're gonna be the leads in that one.
Teaming up again.
I wish I could remember the log line. It's a very weird little, kind of violent sounding log line.
Interesting.
But yeah. So they're gonna be doing more. This Evan Goldberg, Seth Rogen team, directorial comedic duo.
Nice.
That's cool.
Good for them.
All right, so what do we got? What's so that something, this is number two. Did something else come out this weekend that like people wanted to see or something?
Yeah, number one this week, we have that, you know, that Superman movie that came out.
What?
Man of Steel.
What? There's a Superman movie?
It had a weekend gross of $113 million. So, you know, the
plus, you know, the Thursday.
Between number one and number two, there's a $20 million, I mean, almost $100 million difference.
Almost $100 million difference. It's ridiculous.
Total gross of $125 on a budget of $225.
When you include the Thursday grosses.
Yeah, soups.
And something like this is going to make a ton of money internationally.
Oh, yeah. Probably it's a superhero movie.
It's a superhero movie, yeah.
Everybody loves Superman.
So probably $400 or $500 million international dollars. I can see that happening. On $113 million opening weekend, that's the biggest June opening weekend ever. But that's more because a movies like this usually come out in May or July. This was kind of an odd opening, putting this in the middle of June. So it ended up being the biggest June ever, but I think that was kind of the plan all along. Maybe Warner Brothers was like, let's try something slightly risky and see if we can get some, quote, like, opening weekend records.
Uh-huh.
It's not really much of an opening weekend record. It's still really good for them. It's, you know, it's a super opening weekend.
Well, yeah.
But so, Man of Steel, pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Saw it this afternoon.
We definitely enjoyed it.
It was great.
It's the origin movie all over again. We've seen it 1,000 times.
Baby penis.
There's a baby penis, so watch out, little kids. We'll be laughing. It is PG-13. And I think in the green box it says, you know, sci-fi, action, violence, baby penis.
Yeah.
Rude humor. And that's in the opening 10, 15 minutes that's on Krypton. That whole sequence is, I'd see a movie just based on that whole world.
I was just about to say, I want to see a movie based on that Krypton.
Yeah, I would
The suit that Jor-El was wearing.
Like all their suits.
The crazy Kryptonian armor.
That awesome.
That's so awesome.
The awesome production design. The technology they used, their like readouts and stuff.
Oh, and Russell Crowe.
That metallic stuff.
Russell Crowe, what a great Jor-El. Well,
Russell Crowe's a badass, man. He was really, really good. He brought the gravitas, you know, the emotional
weight.
You know, the authority of Jor-El. Like, this is a dude you don't mess with.
No, you do not mess with Jor-El.
And Michael Shannon, like, right away, he's introduced in the first scene as General Zod, or the second scene. And he's a badass. Like, this dude's a general, you know? And him and Russell Crowe, like, their interactions together, all that stuff was really, really good. That really helped set the movie in motion.
Definitely.
Like, it set the tone, the operatic tone of it. And then, of course, story dictates they send Kal-El.
Correct.
A.K.A. Clark Kent to Earth.
A.K.A. Supes.
A.K.A. the Superman. And then jump 20 years, 30 years later.
Boom. And now we're...
we're with 20-something-year-old Superman trying to find his way in the world.
Yeah.
They call that a film ellipses. Like a huge jump like that. Think of 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Yeah.
When the
monolith.
The monolith thing. He throws the bone into the air. The monkey throws the bone into the air. And then it comes back down to satellite.
Yeah.
A time jump of... A jump cut of thousands upon thousands of years. He only went... When you compare it to that, there's only a couple of decades. It's not too bad. It's a pretty short amount of time. And then the movie takes off. It's pretty long.
Yeah.
2 hours and 20-something minutes. But for me, it goes by pretty quickly.
Definitely. But I think that's just because the movie's, you know, broken up in pretty much two parts. We have exposition and then action.
Yeah.
And the exposition goes, and then once the action starts, that 45 minutes just flies.
Yeah. And the that whole setup is pretty important because it makes the action have meaning.
You know,
the way it sets everyone in motion, General Zod isn't just some sort of bloodthirsty maniac. He actually has
his reason.
He has a reasoning behind his actions, and his motivations are made clear, and they're even respectable, and you can empathize with him in some way. Which is, I think, it's the best type of villain. The villains that think what they're doing is good, or even they know what they're doing is good, even though it's bad for everyone else.
Yeah.
Superman versus Zod, extremely compelling. The whole making him choose between the Kryptonian past and the humans, even though we know where it's going. None of us think, is he going to choose the
Kryptonian? But still, watching the struggle's fun.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's well made. Zack Snyder, he's a... I'm a Zack Snyder fan, big time fan, you know, and he definitely it's his least Zack Snyder-ish in terms of style. You know, there's no speed ramping.
Lots of lens flares.
He went with the lens flares, give it the more, slightly more kind of a naturalism thing, because they also went with the handheld camera.
Yeah.
And all, like, zooming in on stuff to go sort of a, I don't want to say fake documentary feel, but just to make it feel a little more real.
Some of those action scenes almost felt like Cloverfield, you know?
Some of it, yeah. The way they caught some of that, yeah. They were going for kind of that modern verisimilitude. And that was a big deal. That calls back to the original Superman movies. When they made the first Superman in 77, 78, apparently they had on the set everywhere. Verisimilitude was all over the set because that's what Richard Donner... That's how he approached the first Superman movies. Like, we just have to make this as contemporary and real and as serious as possible. And then hopefully people won't realize that it's a guy in red underwear and red boots and a cape, you know.
Oh, I'm so glad they got rid of the red underwear.
They got rid of the red underwear.
But
it looks good.
But the revelation that Superman's quote-unquote suit is really just Kryptonian underwear.
It is.
In whole. I mean, Superman... I just realized that one of my favorite childhood superheroes is flying around in his freaking underwear.
It is his underwear, as opposed to like Spider-Man in his pajamas, because he's caught a few Z's in those things.
Well, I know he has, but still, but that's like a suit. Like on Krypton, what Superman is wearing on Earth is his freaking underwear. It's
essentially his underwear, but but that's all they gave him though.
He's wearing Kryptonian underwear.
That's all he found. That's all he had available. Poor guy. What's he gonna do? Make his own? He's fine. He's fine. He's just fortunate.
I just think it's funny that Superman's flying around in his underwear.
In his underwear. But, yeah, but I would fly around in my underwear if my underwear was 20,000-year-old Kryptonian technology that looked exactly like modern-day Under Armour.
Yeah.
You know, mesh clothing that LeBron James wears.
Yes.
During the finals.
Yes.
Man, it's a crazy movie.
It is.
Good acting, great acting.
Great acting.
Russell Crowe, we already talked about him.
Yep.
Kevin Costner
was an awesome...
He held it down.
Awesome Pa Kent.
Jonathan Kent was great. Diane Lane.
Diane Lane was a great Ma Kent.
She wasn't given that much to do, but she was, you know, she held her own for sure.
Well, she didn't say much, but you could read the emotion on her face.
Yeah. I really enjoy the kids that they got to play the young versions of Clark Kent.
Yeah, they were surprisingly good.
Surprisingly good stuff. Even just doing that, exploring... You know, what Clark Kent's childhood would be like, the kind of bullying he would have to put up with.
Yeah, no, it was a very human Superman. A very human look at a very alien Superman.
Yeah, it's that weird, like, it's definitely the most alien Superman has ever felt.
Well, yeah,
for sure.
Definitely. Well,
and it takes that extra human look. At the same time. Yeah, to emphasize that and to bring that out. Yeah. There's some thematic stuff there that they can mine. It's more than just Superman punching someone or punching things, which he does.
Over and over
and it's
over
pretty cool.
And over.
Or heat ray eyes. Or X-ray vision.
Yeah.
I like that all that stuff is.
Yeah.
You know, they all that stuff's in there.
That was cool.
That is fun.
I liked how they did that.
Go see this in theaters, guys. I mean,
oh, definitely.
What are you waiting for?
Yeah, go see it right now.
Now, speaking of money and going to see it, I'm going to have to check the tape. You're going to have to go back to the archives.
Oh, man.
But when we had...
Matt Cabin.
Matt was Cabin. When we had him here on the show in the beginning of the summer, we had a little kind of gentleman's bet going on.
Yes, he did.
And he said Superman would be the highest grossing film, Man of Steel.
Correct.
I said it would be Iron Man 3. And Iron Man 3, actually, do you have box office mojo there still?
Yes, sir.
How much did Iron Man 3, what's it totaled out at?
Oh,
at this weekend.
$399.6.
Oh, that's getting the 400 easy. That's getting the 400 the next couple of days. How much did it make this weekend? Like 2 million?
2.9. Almost 3.
Almost 3. Wow. Yeah, so it's gonna make another 1.5, 2 million next weekend, probably the weekend after that. So it's topping out over 400 million. Man of Steel, I'm still going to say that it tops out around 275, 300. Yeah, I mean,
we'll see.
I'm going to have to pull the footage.
I mean, the people are loving The Man of Steel. I mean, the first time we tried to see it this morning, it was sold out.
It was sold out, and the people are loving it. The critics, not so much.
Critics, not so much.
Which is kind of, well, I want to say it's weird, but I guess it's not. That one's split down the middle, where half the critics are not liking it and half really are. And as a matter of fact, I read this little quote from Manola Dargis, who is one of the critics over at the New York Times, one of the few critics that I prefer to read.
Uh-huh.
And she wrote, Man of Steel will turn on everyone. It doesn't turn off.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
It's either you're going to enjoy what has been done with this movie, or you're going to think it's a load of crap.
Yeah, or you think it's death with its incessant battling towards the end. Man, when some of those fights and battles are so good.
Yeah, and, so much CG.
There's a ton of it.
So much.
There's a ton of it, but some of it's really good.
Oh, it's all really good. I mean, how else are you going to be able to watch Superman fly through 7 buildings, and every time he enters one, there's an explosion, and every time he exits one, there's an explosion.
Yeah, and falling glass, and so many innocent people died.
They destroyed Metropolis in this movie and didn't even talk about it.
And Smallville. Downtown Smallville got wrecked.
Yeah.
And people just died by
the millions.
And, no one really brings it up.
Nope.
But it's cool.
Yeah.
Because he saved billions?
Yeah.
For millions?
Worth it.
Screwed him.
Good job, Zoops.
Yeah. Hey.
Way to kick some ass, Cal.
It's the Man of Steel. That's how it's gonna go. Yeah. That's how Superman's gonna do. He's gonna do what he can.
And you know where it's gonna go. One thing I really liked about this movie,
yes,
they almost didn't call him Superman.
Yeah, that is interesting.
And they only called him Superman once.
Yeah, one time. Yeah.
Really enjoyed that.
And it took a while. It's like, are they ever? How's he going?
Yeah.
What's he going? Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're smart in how they approach the mythology of the story and the different elements and, you know, what their explanations for some things and introducing some new things. Yeah, it's great. It's definitely something to go see in the theater.
Definitely.
So we're in an agreement there with both This Is the End and Man of Steel.
Oh, yeah. Two great movies came out this weekend.
It's a great movie going weekend.
Yeah.
All right, so here we go. We got some new movies coming out this week. First on the Divid, home video, Redbox, Netflix, however you choose to get your...
The Netflix.
However you choose to get your home entertainment. Jack the Giant Slayer.
No desire.
Yeah, that's not very good. But hey, if you're into, you know, crap, check out Jack the Giant Slayer. Stoker.
Oh, I wanted to see that.
That's a good
Missed
one.
Missed it.
With Nicole Kidman. This guy who played Ozymandias in Watchmen, Matthew Good.
Zack Snyder's Watchmen?
Yes. And Mia Wasikowska?
Whatever.
Whatever. It's a weird, like, family gothic, sort of gothic horror. Not really horror, but, you know, like, it's tense and mysterious and really, really crazy. From the guy who directed Old Boy. And Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance and all those movies. His first English language.
Great movies, by the way.
So Stoker is very, very good. Definitely recommend checking that one out on DVD. Or again, however you get your home entertainment. What do we got on in theaters, Drew?
In theaters this weekend, for June 21st, we have World War Z.
Awesome. Looking forward to it.
It is. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, bug-like zombies, Brad Pitt.
I like Brad Pitt. I like the book, even though it looks like a big departure from the book still. I'm a fan of the source material. All right, now here's the thing. First off, I really wasn't looking forward to World War Z because there's a lot of production problems. A lot of people quit the production.
Okay.
They had to reshoot the ending. Like the last 20, 30 minutes, they had to completely reshoot it after it tested very poorly. They went crazy over budget, over schedule. It's just a nightmare of a production. So that, you know, that portends bad times. But, but what happens now, the movie's actually screened for critics. There are some people who are saying this is actually a pretty good movie. It's a thoughtful, well-made, action-packed, you know, huge-scale zombie movie. So, hey, maybe it's still good. Maybe they sorted out whatever problems they had. That, I don't know. It's rare for a movie to have such huge problems, well-publicized problems, and then overcome it with a good movie.
Well, we'll see what happens.
We will see what happens.
Also this week, we have Monsters University coming out.
Sequel to Monsters, Inc.?
Yep.
One of my least favorite Pixar movies.
Prequel to Monsters, Inc.
Prequel to Monsters, Inc. One of my least favorite Pixar movies.
I never saw it. It's the only Pixar movie I haven't seen.
Monsters, Inc.?
Well, that and Cars. I don't care about Cars.
Yeah. Not a fan of either of those. And what else?
Also coming out this weekend, we have The Bling Ring from director Sofia Coppola.
Read the little description there.
Inspired by actual events, a group of fame-obsessed teenagers use the internet to track celebrities' whereabouts in order to rob their homes.
Hi-yo! This debuted at the Cannes Film Festival, and it was really, really big hype behind it, a lot of buzz behind it, and then debuted, and it kind of fizzled out, which is kind of sad. I was looking forward to it. I really like Lost in Translation. That's a great movie.
Oh, fantastic movie.
Marie Antoinette, not so hot.
I didn't see it.
Didn't see that one. And then what was the other one? Oh, you saw the other one she did. The most recent one. The one with the dude in the hotel in the Chateau de Marmont. And remember, there was like the two chicks dancing for him, and he was just sleeping on the bed. It's Stephen Dorff. His daughter comes to live with him. It's called like Somewhere or Something or Some.
Yes. We saw it. I don't remember the name of it, though.
Oh, what a... That movie stunk.
It was not good.
No, it was... that's why we can't remember the title of it. But I have to remember the title to warn people to not watch it because it's a waste of time. Somewhere. It's called Somewhere.
There you go.
Very nondescript, very bland title.
Ugh.
Deserving of that film. But the Bling Ring, though, I thought it looked pretty good. Who are the actors? Is like Emma... what's her name in it? Hermione?
I don't know. I already closed the window.
You already closed the window. Good job, Drew! Moving on. All right, well, let's take a break. Let's go into the Crespo Disco. I need a new beer. I'm parched. Format change of the show.
Format change.
Because 2 weeks in a row, I forgot to mention what the song was coming out of the Crespo Disco.
No, you can't tell people what it's going to be going into it.
But I keep forgetting to tell them what it is going out of it.
But then they can't guess, and we can't tell them that they'll never guess what it is.
That's all you care about?
Yeah. I like telling people what they can't do because they can't do it.
Because
they'll never know what it is.
Because last week was a song for Bob from the Assassination of Jesse James by the Cowardly Robert Ford soundtrack. Nick Cave and Warren Ellis. Great song. I forgot to mention it.
Good job.
I feel bad about that.
So you're going to tell people what it is now?
I think so. Because I keep forgetting. Are you going to help me remember?
No.
Well then, if you're not going to take any responsibility, Mr. Co-Producer...
Hey, I'm just telling you the most likely scenario here, man. I mean, I could lie to you and tell you that, yes, I will remind you, but more than likely I'll forget to. So I'm just going to straight up tell you no.
Fair enough. Well, then things are changing.
All right.
Things are changing around here.
Let's do this.
So speaking of Upstream Color, I'm going with a couple songs off that soundtrack.
Oh, great soundtrack.
So I'm going two songs back to back, enjoying both. The first song is called A Low and Distant Sound, Gradually Swelling and Increasing. That's the name of the song. And the second song is called As If It Would Have a Universal and Memorable Ending. All the song titles are ridiculous like that, dude.
So deep.
They're all like really, yeah, crazy. So enjoy these songs. We'll be back on the other end for the Crespo Dome. Got plenty to talk about. Got movie news. Got questions. Got people giving us two questions. Got a sparring round for Drusa Cogburn versus the world. Hope you're ready, dude.
Oh, I'm always ready. I was born ready, Chris.
All right. Well, we're taking a break, guys. We suggest you take one, too.
Do it.
What? Cinema. Crespo. Viso. Cinema. Crespo. Viso. Thank you very much. Welcome back to the second half of episode 23 of Cinema Crespo Diso. It's me, Christopher Crespo, still here with Drewster Cogburn. How's it going?
What up, dude? Still, we're back.
Still there. We're back. That was the Crespo Disco. A couple songs from the Upstream Color soundtrack, which was done by Shane Carruth himself.
Oh, he did it all himself.
He does everything himself. He wrote it, edited, directed, produced it, distributed, blah, 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 marketing, and even did all the music.
That's a lot of work. A
lot of hats for one dude. Very talented guy. Very talented guy. So that was, it's kind of they're mood pieces, but the whole score is very moody and ethereal like that. And it's very cool, very good movie. So again, watch that. Watch Pi. Watch Primer.
All of them.
A lot of good stuff on Netflix for you people to watch. Let's get some of the plugs out of the way.
Plug.
First off, go to chriscrespo.com.
Go there. It's very important that you do this.
Very important that you go there. There's a bunch of reviews there.
Life-saving information.
There's Netflix picks of the weeks, all the past picks of the weeks. You can check them out. I never know how to pluralize that. Picks of the weeks? Picks of the week?
Yeah, picks of the week.
Previous picks of the week. Multiple weeks, anyway. Back episodes of Cinema Crespo Diso are there, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher. If you're in the Stitcher, you got the Stitcher app, check us out there. Aircheck.us, we're on the Aircheck network because they have tons of shows over there as well that you can check out. So Aircheck.us. And pretty much anywhere. Any way you get your MP3s, not just your MP3s, but any way you get your podcasts. They call them podcast catchers.
They're podcast catchers?
Podcatchers.
Podcatchers.
That's what they call them. Like I use the Beyond Pod app.
Yeah, do I.
Yeah, to get all my shows. That's for the Android folks. Or you can just go to chriscrespo.com. I'm working on a mobile site for that, a mobile version of the site. Hope to have that up soon. Actually, I haven't done any work towards that whatsoever. But I know it has to be done. So I'm going to do it.
Eventually.
Also, if you go to chriscrespo.com, right there on the front, there's a mailing list. If you could go to the mailing list and just subscribe to that, you'll be the first to know about events. We have, we're working on doing some live events coming up here soon. I don't want to say, don't want to give the cat, let the cat out of the bag. There's still some things to finalize. There's also, future giveaways, contests, things like that. You're going to want to be a part of that. So the mailing list on chriscrespo.com, go ahead and sign up for that. And speaking of signing up for things, we didn't mention it last week. Let's mention it this week.
Okay.
Cinema Crespo Diso Fantasy Football League.
Oh, got to do it. Got to sign up.
We have
take on Drewster Cogburn.
Take on Drewster Cogburn, who himself is 1-0.
Damn straight, I am.
In fantasy leagues. He dominated the one league he was ever in. So it's a fantasy football version of Drewster Cogburn versus the world.
Yeah, pretty much.
We have a few people that already signed up, so spots are running out. I'm not going to say how many spots. Just send an email to cinemacrespodiso@gmail.com. In the subject line, put fantasy football. Put in there why you'd like to join up. We're taking both seasoned fantasy professionals, well, not professionals, but seasoned vets of fantasy football and newcomers,
Because I'm pretty much a newcomer, even though,
Yeah, even though he completely dominated that one year, he didn't know what the hell he was doing, to be honest, people. So,
nope.
So he should be an easy one to take down. So it's going to be a 12-team league, and we're running out of spots. CinemaCrespoDiso@gmail.com. Send an email with fantasy football in the subject line if you want in. Twitter, Drew. What's your Twitter?
At Antihara419. Yep. Same on Instagram, same on Xbox Live, same on whatever and you've got.
Anywhere you want to find your Drewster Cogburn.
If I'm not there, then there probably isn't an Antihara419.
So check him out. On the Twitter, I am Chris Crespo. That's always at I am Chris Crespo. There's a bunch of people that are I am this or that,
Oh, yeah.
But I am Chris Crespo.
Are you?
On Twitter.
Chris Crespo?
For sure. For surest. The show is at Crespo Diso on the Twitter and on Facebook.com/CinemaCrespoDiso and Instagram.com/CinemaCrespoDiso for behind-the-scenes stuff and also for behind-the-scenes stuff for SPK Live shows that have been recorded here in the Crespo Diso studios for the last couple months. We've been enjoying that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Got to meet a lot of interesting people. We've got the supervillains over here playing some music. I'm sure their neighbors love that. Had a lot going on. A lot of fun. Good times. What are you looking at over there, Drew? You seem entranced by something.
Not really entranced.
No, you're just thinking around over there a little bit. All right. Well, here we go. We're going to get into the Crespo Dome. We got a lot to talk about. There's a lot going on in the old world of movies. Got a whole lot of movie news. I'm trying to do movie news more. And since, coincidental, I have no idea, but it's a whole bunch of sequel and comic booky type stuff all in that vein. First off, Amazing Spider-Man 2, right? They're working on that. What do you know about the Sinister Six, Drew?
It's basically a super villain squad of Spider-Man's evilest villains.
Which are?
It's kind of like...
Who are the Sinister Six?
Oh, man. Okay, so we've got Electro.
Okay.
We've got Sandman.
Okay.
We've got Vulture.
Mm-hmm. Is Doc Ock one of them?
Doc Ock. Hobgoblin.
Not Green Goblin.
Not Green. Hobgoblin.
Okay.
And maybe the Lizard, but I can't. I don't know.
All right.
I am not.
Well, so far confirmed for Amazing Spider-Man 2, they got Jamie Foxx as Electro.
A black Electro.
A black Electro. He's still blue, but he's a black Electro. Green Goblin, because Harry Osborn is in it. They're going the Green Goblin route. Not Hobgoblin, but Green Goblin.
Green Goblin.
And just confirmed, they also had the Rhino. Rhino's in there.
Oh, okay.
Paul Giamatti's Rhino.
Wow. Whoa.
Weird, right?
Weird.
And confirmed, they got some guy in there playing the Vulture.
All right. So I wonder if they're going to go...
There's already four villains.
I wonder if they're going to go reboot Vulture or if they're going to go old school with the old man Vulture.
They'll probably go... who knows? Who knows? Have you seen the new suit with the big white eyes, the old school white eyes? They finally got the mask right of all the Spider-Man movies.
Really?
They finally got the mask looking like a freaking Spider-Man mask.
Awesome.
That's familiar. It's very interesting. A lot of villains in the new Spider-Man movie. I think it's scheduled to come out next summer? I don't know. There's a good chance Gwen Stacy dies in the next one.
God, I hope so. They need to kill her already.
I think they'll probably just kill her in the second one. They are bringing in Mary Jane. Shailene Woodley is Mary Jane. Have you seen The Descendants yet? The Descendants?
No.
You gotta see that, man.
I know.
She's in that. She's really good. Right, so you got that going on. Also, movie news, sequel news. Top Gun 2 was in development for a little while, and then director Tony Scott sadly threw himself off a bridge.
Poor guy.
It was a shame. So a lot of people just figured the Top Gun 2 sequel died with him, but apparently not. Jerry Bruckheimer still wants to make it. Tom Cruise, more importantly, still wants to make it. So Top Gun 2 is they're steaming ahead. It's pretty interesting.
Oh, man.
Jerry Bruckheimer mentioned it recently at a big convention. He was really promoting The Lone Ranger, but, you know, he got on the tangent, and he ended up talking about Top Gun 2 and how that's still happening, and Tom Cruise is very much still into it. So
nice.
We'll see how that goes. I don't know if I'm really looking, if I really want to see a Top Gun 2. I don't know. I mean, it's a good movie.
Uh-huh.
But do you want to see a sequel?
Not really.
And it's going to be all about, like, modern aviation where, you know, drones and stuff.
Didn't we already have a movie with drones?
Did we?
With Jamie Foxx.
Which one? Stealth.
That's the one.
Also, speaking of Man of Steel.
Oh. Yeah, speaking of Man of Steel, he's right here.
Oh, boy. Cocky son of a bitch.
Time for me to take on the world.
We're going to put a pin in that one. Because it's time for some Juicy Cogburn versus the world. I had a great idea for the round this week, and we had to reschedule, so you get this awesome round. All to yourself for a sparring round.
Yeah.
But it's a great game. It's a new game, but it's one that's definitely going to come up in the future. A bunch of these games will be repeating eventually. You know, Price is the Right style.
Yeah, yeah.
They have a bunch of games, and they just wheel them out. And every now and then, you get Plinko, and you're like, yeah. I love Plinko. This week's game is called Super Franchise Me. I'll name the film or film franchise. You tell me how many movies were made in toto, were released.
Oh, good Lord.
For that franchise, all right? And I had two sets of five, so you're going to get all 10.
Ah, brutal.
Well, I did the work, so here we go. And it's a sparring round, so there's nothing on the line. First of all, Super Franchise Me, how many movies are in? I went easy to start out this one. How many Rocky movies are there? But feel free to, you know, think it out, count them out, do whatever you got to do to try to come to the answer.
5.
It's your final answer?
Yeah.
6.
6. Oh.
There's Rocky, and then Rocky's 2 through 5, and then Rocky Balboa.
Oh.
So that makes 6 Rocky movies in toto.
I forgot about the Balboa.
The Balboa. All right, number 2. How many Hannibal Lecter movies are there? We are fans of the show Hannibal. It's a great show. Mads Mikkelsen's an awesome Hannibal Lecter. But how many?
We got Red Dragon.
We got Red Dragon.
We got Manhunter.
Manhunter, yes. 2 versions of the same book.
Hannibal.
Yes.
Silence of the Lambs.
There you go.
Are there any others? I don't think there are. I think 4.
All right. So the answer is, your answer is 4. Correct answer is 5.
What did I miss?
You missed Hannibal Rising, which is a really bad prequel about a young Hannibal in a prep school. That's like an 06, 05 movie.
Yeah. Well, there we go.
All right. Number 3. How many Jaws movies were there? How many times could they make a movie about a giant man-eating great white shark?
4.
That is correct. Jaws, Jaws 2, Jaws 3D at SeaWorld, and Jaws 4, The Revenge.
Yes.
This time it's personal. That's the movie that brought the tagline, "This time it's personal."
Yes.
All right. Number 4. Remember Kickboxer with Jean-Claude Van Damme?
Yes.
That's the one where he fights the guy at the end with the glass on his fist, the glue, the Taipei rules or something. Uh-huh. I can't remember what those are. Taipei deathmatch rules. How many Kickboxer movies were there?
4.
You said 4. The correct answer is 5.
See, with these Kickboxer movies, I have no idea how many of them went to DVD.
That was a bit of a... Yeah, some. Actually, maybe most of them did.
Like I said.
Kickboxers 2 through 4 starred Sasha Mitchell from Step by Step.
Okay.
The guy who played Cody.
Yeah.
He played Jean-Claude Van Damme character's brother. And like the Kickboxer 2 opened with Van Damme's character being murdered. And then Sasha Mitchell plays the brother. And he tracks down the murderer, who ends up being Tong Po. And then they made a bunch of movies with him, 2, 3, 4. And then they made a Kickboxer 5 with Mark Dacascos. And he was going out to avenge the death of Sasha Mitchell's character. So apparently both those brothers eventually, the kickboxer brothers eventually both got murdered.
Nice.
Pretty dour for a franchise there. Okay, so let me see. So far you're 1 right, 3 wrong. Ooh, Drew, come on. Here we go. How many Nightmare on Elm Street movies did they make? Or how many, should I say, Freddy movies?
6.
Oh, 9.
Ah. Oh,
they made 9 of them. They made 7 like straight up Nightmare on Elm Street movies. Then they did Freddy vs. Jason, and then they did the remake, which all that comes out to 9.
Man.
All right. Number 6, Rambo. How many movies did they make about Vietnam vet PTSD sufferer
5?
John Rambo?
I believe.
They made 4.
Duh. I am. This is so terrible.
They made 4. This one's going to be tough, I'll tell you right now. How many Leprechaun movies did they make?
What, like 6? 7? I'll go with 7. I like that number.
You like 7?
Yeah.
Should have stuck with 6.
Duh, son of a bitch.
Leprechaun 1, 2, and 3. Leprechaun 4 is when he was in space. Leprechaun 5 is in the hood. And Leprechaun 6, they go back to space? I might have got some of those mixed up. But there were 6 in total. All right. If you thought that was tough, how many James Bond movies have they made? And I'm saying James Bond movies in total and not just the canonical ones. I'll take ones that are non-canon as well.
23.
That's tough, man. The correct answer is 25.
I can't believe I was so close.
They made 23 Eon-produced, like, canonical James Bond movies, and then they made 2 non-canon James Bond films. They did in the late 60s. They did a version of you were a super.
I was arguably correct.
That's why I
arguably.
Made, arguably, I no, you're incorrect because I said non-canonical.
Okay,
was included. They did a version of Casino Royale in the 60s. That was a comedy. But it was not an official James Bond movie. And then in the early 80s, they did Never Say Never Again with Sean Connery, where he came back as James Bond. But they didn't have the rights to anything, so they're like, there's no James Bond theme. Like, a lot of the characters aren't there. It's weird. And it's essentially a remake of Thunderball. It's weird. So 25 James Bond movies in total have been made. That's a hell of a lot of freaking James Bond movies.
That is.
How many Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies have been made?
Five.
Dude, you are not doing well.
I suck today.
Seven Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies have been made. They made, there's the original, there's one in the 80s, the second one was in the 80s, the third and fourth one were in the 90s, the fourth one is the one with Matthew McConaughey and Reese Witherspoon, I think. Very weird movie. And then they did the remake around 2003 with Jessica Biel.
Yeah.
And then they did a prequel to that. With Arlie Ermey, and then they just did Texas Chainsaw 3D. I mean, that's ridiculous. That's a shit ton of movies.
That's a lot, dude.
And finally, how many Star Trek movies have they made?
11.
Oh, so close. 12. They've made 12 Star Trek movies, including the most recent Star Trek Into Darkness. That means, Schuster Cogburn, you went 1-9 in Super Franchise League.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're looking forward to that game coming back.
Oh, yeah, that was a good one. Wow.
So that was this week's hashtag DCVTW. Man, Drew looks disappointed. People, you should see how disappointed Drew looks
right
now.
That was terrible. I'm disappointed in myself. All right, that was a horrible showing.
He's very competitive. All right, well, let me just take a quick sip of my beer. You sit there quietly while I sip my beer, people. Ah, that's delicious. Oh, parches my throat. My throat's so parched and, you know, satiety. Anyway, here we go. All right. Where were we? Man of Steel.
Yes.
Huge weekend.
Huge.
$125 million, right?
Yes.
Before it even came out on Friday, and before the numbers even came in, Warner Brothers and DC, they went the whole, hey, we're green-lighting, fast-tracking the sequel right now, you know, no matter what happens. So a big opening weekend just ensures that this is happening. But as of last week, Warner Brothers announced Man of Steel 2 is fast-tracked. They wanted to come out. They want to start filming in January.
Oh, wow.
Of 2014, which means they're shooting for summer of 2015.
Yeah.
Which I'm pretty sure is the same summer as Avengers 2.
Oh, man.
So they want to go head-to-head with that behemoth.
And lose.
Yeah, most likely, because that's just a juggernaut. But it's still cool, though, that David Goyer, who came up with the original story idea and pitched it to Christopher Nolan, and he's the one that wrote the screenplay for this one. I thought it was a pretty good story. I like it. Some people are shitting on it. I think
I enjoyed it.
I'm not a really big fan of this guy and his style. I think, like, all the Batman movies are overplotted. I thought this one was good. The story was all tied together well. I didn't think it was overplotted. So they got him already working on the screenplay. And they already got Zack Snyder signed on to direct, so he's coming back, which is interesting. They did not sign him on, like, on a contract, like, we got you for two movies, we got you for three movies, you know. They're doing him on a movie-by-movie basis. And apparently, also, they said that they want Goyer to also write their Justice League movie.
Ooh.
So it'll be Man of Steel, Man of Steel 2, and that'll lead probably into a Justice League film.
Uh-huh.
So that's, you know, that's interesting. And then also confirming, I brought this up recently, Terminator 5.
Yeah.
With Schwarzenegger. It's happening.
Oh, wow.
Also filming in January, so expect Terminator 5 also summer of 2015.
Yeah.
That's going to be a crazy summer. You got Terminator 5, Man of Steel 2, Avengers 2. Dude.
Yeah.
Big summer. Big summer. All right, so that's all your movie news. I got a whole bunch of questions. I'm going to start with... got this one. If you have a question for the show, there's many ways you can ask us. I would like if you could send us an email, cinemacrespediso@gmail.com. That's our all-purpose, you know, way to contact us. You can always Facebook us. I ask for questions on Facebook, facebook.com/cinemacrespediso. You can send me the questions on Twitter, @crespediso or @IamChrisCrespo, and I'll make sure to get them in there. I got a bunch of them this week. I got one on Facebook from this dude. What's his name? Joseph Crespo. Oh, yeah, it's my brother.
Nice.
My brother asked, with the advancement of holograms in this day and age, most famously Tupac at Coachella 2012 with Dre and Snoop Dizzle D, do you see Hollywood using this technology in future projects? By the application of bringing deceased actors back to the stage, such as Raul Julia, Heath Ledger, or John Candy. That's a weird threesome of actors to point out. Wait, there's more. Should we or shouldn't we do it? Now he wants to get into the moral quandaries of it. And which actor would you like to bring back to the screen if you were given a choice? The people have spoken. That's Joseph Crespo. All right, so first off, Raul Julia, Heath Ledger, or John Candy. That's an interesting trio. But you're kind of mixing up technologies, though. They wouldn't do hologram stuff for a movie.
Yeah, no, they'd be, they would just put that in post.
Right.
You know, you could have CG versions.
Well, okay, they have done stuff like that. Like, speaking of Terminator, in Terminator Salvation, they had an all-CG Arnold.
Yeah.
A young version of him.
Looked terrible.
Did not look good. They had the young Jeff Bridges in Tron Legacy. Again, not, you know, at times look good. When his mouth was moving, he was talking, didn't look so hot. They've been trying to do stuff like that, change the way people look completely. It's inevitable that they get to a point where they can CG old, they can CG John Wayne and have a John Wayne appear in a scene. That's totally possible in the near future. Not even that far away, but should they do it?
Nah, I don't know about that.
I don't know. What's the point? We have actors. We have actors looking for work. They want to work. They want to act. Why are we going to... Even then, you can hire actors to do the motion capture work and the voice impersonations and all that stuff. There's still people. You're still going to need the human element in order to create these digital creations. Theoretically.
Yeah. Theoretically.
I don't know. Who would you like to see brought back? If it was going to happen, if it was inevitable... Is there anyone that you're like, you know what, let's bring this guy back?
I think I would love to see Raul Julia in something else besides
Street Fighter.
Street Fighter as his coup de grace, you know?
Yeah,
sad way to so go bad out. For him.
Dying of horrible stomach cancer when he made that movie. And I'm sure that
it must have affected his brain.
It must have. By that point, it was in his brain because he thought that movie was a good idea. He was good at it, though.
Yeah.
He's a great Bison.
Yeah.
It's the best he can say for a Street Fighter movie.
Yep.
You know, I would like to see, he's not dead, but he is retired. I'd bring back a young Gene Hackman.
Okay.
Like a 30-year-old, 40-year-old Gene Hackman. Because that guy is, man, talk about an actor. That guy was great.
Oh, yeah.
I'd love to put young Gene Hackman in a movie with, like, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
That'd be cool.
Watch those guys act it out.
Yeah.
Duke it out, acting chops-wise. Yeah, all right, so that's that question, right?
Yep.
You got them all. John, I would like to see John Candy come back. Love John Candy. And Chris Farley. Bring them both back. Put them in a movie. Tommy Boy 2 meets Uncle Buck 2. Right?
Okay.
Someone write that. Someone make it happen.
You write that. You make it happen.
No, I got shit to do. Let's see. I got a double question from Twitter at Joey_D5, formerly... At Joey_Disturco.
Okay.
Formerly at Mr._Joey_Shuffles. Formerly, I don't know if he was on Twitter before that. He changed his name a few times. God bless you, sir.
Don't say that.
Gesundheit.
This means the same thing. I reject your blessing.
Salud. No, that's wrong. He asked, first off on Twitter, because he has two questions. He asked on Twitter, what sequel/remake do you want to see but probably won't get? He said he would like to see a sequel to Back to the Future.
Okay.
So along those lines, you know, like we've talked about before, you and I, how we both like to see like a new version of Westworld.
Yeah.
That's a movie that's prime for like remaking.
Yeah, I want a remake though, not a sequel.
Yeah, they don't have to do a sequel. Yeah, might as well. That's something you just go okay, remake so, it. And it does have a sequel.
A sequel that I won't get. I want a new Highlander movie. I'll never get it.
A Highlander, you want a sequel or a new origin, new one?
Ooh.
Back to the beginning.
You know, I'll take both.
Get a whole new quickening.
I'll take both.
Would you?
Yeah, I'll take
a reboot. Cool.
I'll take an old Christopher Lambert running out there chopping off people's heads.
That'd be interesting.
With an even older Sean Connery.
He needs the work, man. He needs the work. He was in about 5 minutes of the Ghost Rider sequel.
Yeah. And then, yeah, or I'll take a fresh reboot with some new technology, maybe even more exploding cars for quickenings, because, man, those quickenings were expensive.
Quickening, yeah. Quickening can run up a quick bill on people.
Oh, yeah.
Insurance companies hate quickenings. man, that's interesting. How about the Beastmaster? Going 80s fantasy.
I wasn't really a fan of Beastmaster.
No, you weren't a fan. I know someone else.
I even gave the back in the 90s. They tried to reboot the Highlander series as a cartoon.
Oh, I don't remember that. Really?
Oh, it was so bad.
Like like 90s style cartooning.
Yeah,
like
90s
really low,
style cartooning,
really,
but it was
rent,
it was
really cheap.
Super. It was in the super future. And blah 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 blah.
Super future.
Yeah. Oh god. It was
super
so bad.
Future.
It was really really bad.
Man, I missed that one. I missed that one. I would go with, you know, like we mentioned, Westworld, a sequel. I'd totally be down for let's get a whole bunch of new actors in and redo a new Police Academy, but go back to the original Police Academy, which was R-rated. The only one of all the Police Academy movies that was R-rated, had some titties in it. They were cursing. It was a fun time for adults.
Yeah.
I say let's bring back the Police Academy series. What's his name? Michael Winslow, bring him back. He's Jonesy. He's an instructor now. He's fucking with all the kids and it sounds woo 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 me, you know, making sounds at them and shit. Gutenberg, he's not doing nothing. Nope. Bring him back. He's running the whole thing, you know, but they're the Renegade Police Academy. This thing writes itself, Hollywood. Get on it. Oh my goodness gracious, do I gotta do everything for you? So there you go. That's your question answered for that one. Joey DeSturco also asked, he sent us a question to our email at cinemacrossbodiso@gmail.com. Kind of a long one. Kind of a long question, Joey. We're trying to keep these things kind of short. Here we go. I just saw Man of Steel, and during the previews, they showed a glimpse of Pacific Rim.
Okay.
Right? Did we see that one today?
No, we didn't get that one.
I think I saw it yesterday. He says, now the movie doesn't look good. See, I think it looks good.
I think it looks great.
My brother doesn't think it looks good. He thinks it's dumb.
How can you? It's giant robots versus giant monsters. What are you people? Come on.
That's what I'm saying. now the movie doesn't look good, but I learned that Charlie Hunnam. Do you know what that guy is?
Nope.
No. Charlie Hunnam and Ron Perlman are both in it. And if you don't know who they are Jax and Clay in Sons of Anarchy. You watch that show?
Nope.
I don't watch it. We're both fans of Ron Perlman, though. We know plenty.
I know Mr. Perlman.
We both know plenty of Mr. Perlman. I was wondering how you feel about having two actors from a TV show pairing up again in a movie. I understand that comedies can kind of get away with it, almost in Vince Vaughn, but I don't think any action/drama/thriller/whatever should do it. I was just wondering how you felt about it. Sense for my iPhone.
I mean, if it works, it works. If it doesn't work, then,
I mean...
I'm not sure. I mean...
Has there been any examples of that? I mean, he points out Vince Vaughn, Owen Wilson, but they haven't been on a TV show.
What, on-screen duos? Transferring
to a big screen duo.
I guess this is the first time.
The Odd Couple? Was that a TV show and then turned into a movie? Right?
Maybe, but I don't think it was with those guys.
It wasn't with Walter Matthau and...
No. I mean, Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon teamed up for Grumpy Old Men.
Which was great.
Which was a great movie.
But yeah, but by that time...
they weren't playing the same character. I mean,
they're just old. Well, they're not playing the Sons of Anarchy. They're not playing bikers.
Obviously.
You know, obviously, yeah. Right. You know, I could see how that could make some people be like, if they're fans of Sons of Anarchy, and then they see these two characters, especially if they interact together.
Well, whatever. It's Ron Perlman with his clout.
Ron Perlman's in everything anyway.
Yeah.
Literally everything. Yeah. Everything from like big movies like Pacific Rim to Uwe Boll movies, like that one with Jason Statham in The Name of the King, A Dungeon Siege Tale. That's the whole title.
Awesome.
There's a colon in there somewhere. You know, I don't see too... All right, are there any like TV, modern acting TV pairs right now that you can think of? I would even want to see them in a movie. I don't know. I really don't watch that much TV,
exactly. And most of the television that I do watch is almost a movie anyway.
Right. It's like Breaking Bad or Game of Thrones. It's all cinematically done anyway.
Exactly.
Breaking Bad's actually shot on film.
Yeah.
For criminy's
sake. Good for them.
Yeah, one of the last ones to do it. One of the last ones. So there you go. Thanks, Joey, for the questions. We got three questions from two Joeys. It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Mr. Natathon on the Twitter asked, at Mr. Natathon, asked us to rank Zack Snyder's films. He wants us to do them from worst to best. And why is the best?
All right, so give me a list. Best. Give me the list.
Zack Snyder's movies. Chronological order. Started with Dawn of the Dead.
Okay.
That was like 03, 04, something like that. Followed that up with... what was that one he did?
Man, I'll just bring him up on the
wiki. He did something before Watchmen. Why is it escaping me now? 300. Duh. Brain fart. I think I need another beer. So he did Dawn of the Dead.
300.
300 and 07.
Watchmen.
Watchmen in 09. Sucker Punch, 2011.
Uh-huh.
Man of Steel this weekend.
All right, so we're going to go with...
Starting with the worst. Number... How many movies is that? Is that 5, 6?
Yeah. Starting with the worst. Gonna have to go with Sucker Punch.
Me too. I was gonna say Sucker Punch.
I mean, and it's a shame because
it's his only original one, the only one that he wrote.
Exactly, and the good parts are so good.
There are brief moments of brilliance here and there throughout
and
that movie.
The bad parts are so bad.
Yeah, in the end, it's really not a good movie.
And the bad parts outweigh the good parts.
Absolutely.
So, unfortunately. But man, some of those action scenes are just it's freaking eye candy, bro.
Yeah.
Like watching hot girls stab giant samurais welding miniguns in the head after a bunch of explosions and flips in slow motion, and
people kept getting shot in the eye. She kept shooting things in the eye.
So awesome.
World War One zombified German soldiers with
steampunk
soldier. Yeah, weird stuff. Very weird stuff.
I really enjoyed that aspect of it. The whole other part really sucked.
It all falls apart though. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't hold together. It's all a bunch of hooey. All
right, so number four.
You already know what your next one is. Mm. Your next worst to best. Mm. I mean, you think? I want to see if we can say it at the same time because we should have said that one at the same time. Let me think. Okay. All right.
We count of three. So 1, 2, 3.
And then we'll say it.
Okay. One, two, three. Dawn of the Dead.
All right. Yeah. There we go. I really, 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 really like Dawn of the Dead.
So do I, but
from this point on, we're not even talking about worse. I mean, now it's just, you know, all these movies are good. I'm a big fan of Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah.
Kind of credit that movie with... that and 20 Days Later come out around the same time. Really kickstarting the whole zombie thing.
Yeah.
Really kicking the high gear, and now we've been inundated.
Oh, man,
for years.
I mean, crap. I just downloaded some Xbox Live game about zombies.
Oh, did you
yesterday?
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Get down on that a little bit later. But it's good, though. It's fun.
Yeah. No, it is. Zombies are great.
It's a little thin.
Like
a little thin. The characters are thin, two-dimensional, most of them. But,
yeah.
You know, whatever you can do, it's a zombie movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Fast zombies, most of them.
Yeah.
But then when time lapses, they become slow zombies.
Of course, which is how it should be.
But I think they can get some of them are fast.
As they decay, they should slow down.
As the rigor mortis sets in, they should be slow zombies. It makes sense if it's a fast zombie, if they're fresh corpse.
Yeah.
Old corpse, slow zombie.
Yes.
Okay. All right, so that's the next one. All right, so now what would be our next one on our list? Let me see. Do you have one already?
I'm ready.
You're ready. All right. So what's left? That one and then that one.
What's left? We have.
Okay. All right. I think.
On three?
Number three movie. Ready? One, two, three. 300. Yep. There we go. 300. Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's. Again.
Yeah.
You can say the exact same thing.
Exactly.
What we were saying. Eye candy.
Oh, it's so, yeah. But and
painterly, gorgeous.
Exactly, but this one's got a little more deep of a story. It kind of...
Based on historical record.
Historical record, and more importantly, a graphic novel by Frank Miller.
He knows what he's doing.
I like the comic book tie.
Yeah, yeah.
Once again, you know, Zack Snyder goes over the top with it.
Absolutely.
Which was a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, definitely an enjoyable movie. And it came out, people were like, what? They weren't expecting that either. Like the style of it and just the look, like grainy, kind of velvety look to it.
The three-step zoom process.
Yeah, the zooming in and out and the speed ramping. Yeah, it's so over the top.
It is, but it's so much fun.
All right, we are in agreement.
Yeah.
All right, now this one's going to be tricky.
I know how this is going to work.
This one's tricky
I think
because one of them is so fresh. it's so hard to say. Well, okay, here we go. You ready?
On three.
One.
Number two. One, two, three. Man of Steel. Yeah.
Okay. Because it's we just seen it.
We did just see it. But, you know, the more I think about it and the more we talk about it, for the most part, there's this thin veneer of it's just a Superman movie. So the Superman, there's the origin, you know.
Right.
And then there's a whole bunch of action at the end.
Right.
But as we've been talking about it, they really went into detail.
They thought a lot about it.
They thought a lot about all these really little parts of the movie. And I think that's where my appreciation for it comes in.
Yeah, they definitely they took a serious approach, you can say, to it. You know, they cut out a lot of the campiness and silliness. Which that's another reason why a lot of critics are kind of down on it, because it's not necessarily humorless, but it's not, you know, overly funny.
No.
But I like that, though.
Exactly.
It's a modern Superman movie. Yeah. Yeah, we're in agreement. I agree with everything you just said, for sure.
Yeah.
And which means, obviously, number Watchmen. One, Watchmen. I mean, we both love that movie.
It's they said it couldn't be made.
They said it couldn't be made. And they tried making it for 20 years. They tried making it. They did make it. It barely made $100 million, which you can argue for an R-rated, almost three-hour comic book movie for adults to crack $100 million. You can argue that's a success.
Yeah.
Success.
Correct.
For a movie that cost about $130 million to make and had a lot of hype behind it, you could argue that's kind of a bomb. It's a little bombish. But, you know, it's got its following. Plenty of money, home video.
Oh, yeah.
It started, obviously, renewed interest in Watchmen. DC Comics. Yeah. They've commissioned all these prequels and all these side works now. They got not Alan Moore. He wants nothing to do with all this crass commercialism. But the other guy. Dave Gibbons. They got him in on a lot of this stuff, which is, you know.
It's cool.
The power of the movie. I love that movie.
Oh, dude, it's fantastic. It can be a labor to sit through, but man.
Especially if you sit through the 3.5-hour version with all the animated Tales of the Black Freighter stuff in there, voiced by Gerard Butler.
Yeah.
I'll watch that.
It's good stuff.
Good stuff.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, that's why we think it's the best. And, you know, maybe in a few years, Man of Steel will age in a way like, oh man, I really, really like this movie, and I might like it more than Watchmen. For right now, you know. Yeah. All right, so here you go. That's that question. And this is our last question from Cinema Crust Media Show correspondent Billy D, who's now question number 23.
Yes.
For 23 episodes. Thank you, Billy. We appreciate it. It's a very simple one, actually. He wants to do a Crespidome battle.
Okay.
Christopher Lee versus Werner Herzog.
So what has Christopher Lee done?
Christopher Lee, Saruman from all the Lord of the Rings movies.
Okay.
The other wizard.
Yeah.
That guy. He's been in close to 300 movies in his career because he's an older fellow.
Well,
obviously,
yeah.
He's been around working since the 50s.
Wow.
Actually, Christopher Lee, wasn't he also in... Or am I thinking of Christopher Plummer? I'm thinking of Christopher Plummer. Christopher Plummer was in Sound of Music.
Awesome.
And he's super old, but he's still in a bunch of movies and he just did some stuff. Christopher Lee, British guy, 60s and 70s. He did a lot of Hammer films. Not MC Hammer, because he really wasn't doing stuff in the 60s and 70s. Hammer Films was a British horror film production company in the UK.
Okay.
And he did a lot of Dracula movies. He was Dracula in the 60s and 70s for British cinema. And for people who like that British grindhouse type stuff. Lord of the Rings movies, he was Saruman. He was just in Hugo. He was a librarian, bookseller in Hugo. He's great. Great actor. Older fellow. Prolific. Good stuff. Werner Herzog.
We know who. Yeah, I know. I'm very familiar with Mr. Herzog.
It's Werner Herzog. So, double battle, right? It's a Crespodome battle. Acting versus who would win in a fight. So we'll start with acting. Werner Herzog has done some acting.
And he's terrible.
If you can call it acting.
Werner Herzog is not an actor. He is a director and commentator.
Commentator, documentarian. He does a lot of stuff. Philosopher. He does a lot of stuff.
He does.
Acting is not his forte.
No.
He's giving it a go, which is cool.
He's no good at it.
He's not that good. You would think all that hanging out with Klaus Kinski, something would wear off, but no.
No.
Meanwhile, Christopher Lee, venerated actor, like I said, ridiculous amount of work. You don't get that much work if you suck.
Correct.
So Christopher Lee has to win that battle. He has to. But when it comes to the old fisticuffs.
No, man.
I don't know.
Both really old men.
They are both old men. That would actually be a sad fight.
Yes.
It would make me sad to see that happen. But I would have to go with the toughness of Werner Herzog.
Oh, yeah. Well, dude, he's been fighting the world, fighting him for how many years?
He's fought back the world. He's fought nature. Yeah. He's fought the Amazon jungle. He's fought indigenous tribes, violent tribes who don't want him like shooting films on their land.
Grizzly bears.
He was shot during an interview. Go to YouTube and look up Werner Herzog. He gets shot during an interview, and you see him get shot. And then later, he gets shot like a BB, you know. But still, it went through his shirt, and he was bleeding. And then later, they sit down, and he's still bleeding, and they show him the BB. And the guy's like, "Don't you want to get that taken care of?" And he goes, "It's an insignificant bullet."
So yeah, he wins.
So Werner Herzog has to win that battle. That made me actually want to look up. I remember reading this thing a few years ago. Almost thought I hallucinated for a bit because it was so crazy, but it was real. A few years ago, Werner Herzog started his own film school called the Rogue Film School. You can check it out at www.roguefilmschool.com. Now,
oh, man.
Based on this curriculum and the way this works, I don't know if it's still happening. If it ever did happen, you'll know once we start going through some of these things. I have What is this? Like 12? No, I'm not trying to do that. Like 12 different things here about the film school. When you click on about, this is what comes up on the website.
Okay.
First off, number one, Rogue Film School will be in the form of weekend seminars held by Werner Herzog in person at varying locations and at infrequent intervals.
Okay. Whenever Werner has some time.
Whenever he has a weekend, he better be able to show up.
Yeah.
And you better be in that part of the world. Number two, the number of participants will be limited to a maximum of 65. Pretty big class. Number three, locations and dates will be announced on this website approximately 12 weeks in advance, blah, 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 on WernerHerzog.com. Number four, here we go. This is where it gets interesting. The Rogue Film School will not teach anything technical related to filmmaking. For this purpose, please enroll at your local film school.
Okay, so it's a film school that doesn't teach you how to make films.
Number five, the Rogue Film School is about a way of life. It is about a climate, the excitement that makes film possible. It will be about poetry, films, music, images, literature.
Okay.
So there you go, that answers that. Number six, the focus of the seminars will be a dialogue with Werner Herzog, in which the participants will have their voice with their projects, their questions, their aspirations. Oh boy, here we go. Number seven, excerpts of films will be discussed, which could include your submitted films. They may be shown and discussed as well. Depending on the materials, the attention will revolve around essential questions. How does music function? How do you narrate a story? This will certainly depart from the brainless teachings of three-act screenplays. I love that. How do you sensitize an audience? How is space created and understood by the audience? How do you produce and edit a film? How do you create illumination and an ecstasy of truth?
Ecstasy of truth.
How do you create that?
Yeah. That's a good question. How do you create an ecstasy of truth, Chris?
Werner Herzog will help you figure that out. Number eight, related but more practical subjects will be the art of lockpicking, traveling on foot, the exhilaration of being shot at unsuccessfully, the athletic side of filmmaking, the creation of your own shooting permits, the neutralization of bureaucracy, guerrilla tactics, self-reliance.
So this is basically Werner Herzog sitting in front of 65 people telling them how batshit crazy he is.
This is how you have to learn how to pick locks. Censorship will be enforced. There will be no talk of shamans, of yoga classes, nutritional values, herbal teas, discovering your boundaries, and inner growth. No talk of your inner growth whatsoever.
Weird.
Number 10, related but more reflective, will be a reading list. Required reading, Virgil's Georgics, Ernest Hemingway's The Short Happy Life of Francis Wilcomber, and Baker's The Peregrine. But specifically the New York Review Books edition published by HarperCollins. So don't fuck around with that Penguin Publishing bullshit. Also suggested reading the Warren Commission Report, The Poetic Edda, translated by Lee M. Hollander. In particular, The Prophecy of the Seeress. That's where you got to get that one from.
Yeah.
And Bernal Diaz del Castillo's True History of the Conquest of New Spain. That's just suggested reading. But if it were...
What?
If Werner suggested he read that to learn how to make a movie, I suggest you read all that stuff.
Guy is crazy.
Required film viewing list.
Oh, this is going to be good.
The Treasure of the Sierra Madre from 1948, one of my favorite films. Viva Zapata from 1952, directed by Elia Kazan. The Battle of Algiers from 1966, another great movie. Battle of Algiers is on the Netflix Instant. This one I've never heard of. The Apu Trilogy, trilogy of Indian films from the 50s. And I like this. And if available, Where is the Friend's Home? A film from 1987.
Weird.
Required film viewing. And finally, number 12, Follow Your Vision. Form secretive rogue cells everywhere. At the same time, be not afraid of solitude. The Rogue Film School. That sounds like the kind of film school I want to go to.
It's not even a film school.
But it is, though.
But is it?
No. But it is.
No.
It's Werner Herzog's film school. It's the Rogue Film School. We're going to start a rogue cell. If you're interested in starting a rogue cell with Cinema Crust Beasel, cinemacrustbeasel@gmail.com. Put rogue school. Rogue cell. Put rogue cell.
And get the NSA all over you.
Well, they already are, so screw them. Screw you, NSA. We know you're listening, man. So there you go. That's it. That's your episode 23 of Cinema Crespo. So kind of a long episode, just you and me. We don't even have a guest here.
Yeah, well, we got to talking. Superman's some interesting stuff.
Superman was some interesting stuff. So I hope you guys enjoyed all the talking. Hope you're still with us. Now we're at the end of the episode. Hey, we'll be back next week, episode 24. We're going to have a special guest in here.
It's going to be good.
It's going to be great. Looking forward to it.
I'll be well-rested.
Drew will be well-rested because he's done flying around the world the last 6 weeks. He's been doing a lot of...
8 weeks.
Last 8 weeks.
Nine weeks.
Last 9 weeks. He's been traversing the globe. His latest endeavor found him in the hills of South Korea, where he was helping small fishing villages irrigate. You know, they needed new irrigation because of the droughts over there and, you know... They're very proud of you over there in South Korea, aren't they, Drew?
Yes, they are. They're very friendly people. Very friendly. Great food too.
What was more fulfilling for you in your all your latest missions around the world, all your humanitarian efforts? Was it saving the pygmy village in South America in the Amazon? Was it the helping the South Koreans with the irrigation? Was it that time you went to Angola and you helped install the basketball courts and
Angola
the soccer
was
fields?
Not fun.
Angola was not fun. How about when you were in the mountains of Portugal and you're working at that Bible camp? And you were helping with the refugee children.
Dude, the refugee children and the Bible camp, let me tell you.
And you were doing the puppet shows?
The Padres there, they get great hash.
In Portugal?
In Portugal.
So that's why? Is that better than the time that one weekend you spent in Bombay helping to teach them how to poo in toilets and not on the street?
Yes.
That was better?
Yes, it was. Because let me tell you, man, when the kids couldn't get it down... And they would just run out in the streets. I mean, I'm walking there, man.
And you're walking
there. And there's just children crapping all over the streets.
But you didn't get any fulfillment from the time you went to Norway and you helped them because they had the global warming and their mountains are melting and you helped them find a way to like turn everything
to
back
refreeze
into ice
the mountains.
And refreeze mountains.
Yeah.
Remember when you were working on for a weekend?
That was really interesting, but we didn't get anywhere. We failed. Okay. So, you know.
So you're sticking with the hash and Portuguese mountains?
Yeah. The Portuguese mountains. I mean, the Padres were really nice.
While you're at the Bible camp?
Yeah.
With refugee kids?
Yeah, with refugee kids. Yeah.
Okay.
Those Padres get down, man.
Well, I'm glad that you're back.
Freaky nuns, too.
I mean, I don't know why you spent all that money out of your own pocket to help all those people. Meanwhile, you can't afford a new computer.
Because I'm a nice guy.
Such a nice guy.
I'm a nice guy. That's why I can't afford a new computer.
If you want to donate your gently used MacBook,
even
laptop,
severely used.
Or even severely used, it's still operating.
Just as long as it works and
just
it can
as long
update.
As it works. If you want to submit, help out the show, help out Drew Sikogren, you can go ahead and send that to us. We appreciate it very much. Thank you. All right, so that's episode 23. Thanks a lot, Drew. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you guys for listening. Tell your friends. iTunes, rate us, review us, all that stuff on all those things. Stitcher, AirCheck, et cetera.
Stitcher, AirCheck, iTunes, ChrisCrespo.com.
We're out. Peace.
Can you imagine? two sweet-ass dudes like us in that car traveling through the desert across America. Wouldn't it look so fucking cool? We would go places and park the car where we know we look cool, hang out smoking cigarettes, leaning against the car looking cool, and let people look at us. We could get fucking trashed on drugs in the middle of nowhere and drive 150 miles an hour naked down the freeway and hang out the windows shooting shotguns at freeway signs and fucking historical landmarks and fucking jackrabbits. Dude, we could make some jackrabbit jerky and jackrabbit shoulder pads for our new leather jackets. Dude, you're Lord Humongous. Dude, you are fucking Lord Humongous. You are Lord fucking Humongous. The master of fire. The king of the wasteland. Lord Humongous doesn't get cheated on by some stupid bitch. Lord Humongous doesn't say, was it good for you? He doesn't say, who called or where were you last night? He doesn't leave the fucking gang when he falls in love. Nobody fucking tells Lord Humongous what to do. Lord Humongous fights when he wants to fight and fucks when he wants to fuck. And when all else fails, he drives straight into the fucking tanker. The thing is that Lord Humongous dominates his women and they fucking love him for it.
Seriously. We should get out of here. We should get away from all this shit. Make new friends and meet people and stuff and like... Okay, that it hurts. Okay? You're not the only one who fucked up. Okay, you're getting ready to start your new life as Lord Humongous.